So why are we here, Mike?
I think we're here to start a podcast.
Mike, this is your most hated song in the world.
It is. I dislike it the most. It's fine though, right? To dislike a song.
Yeah. Do you remember that band Magic that came out like maybe 15 years ago?
No.
It was like Magic exclamation mark, and it was a bunch of white guys doing like faux reggae.
No.
And they had a song that I was like, I can't believe this song fucking exists. That's the one I would submit to the most hated song list.
Okay. I'm intrigued to see how this... So, I'm doing this music league with a bunch of people, and we are... the topic of this week's group is least favorite song, or most hated song.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that shakes out. My song was Holding Back the Years by Simply Red.
That you just started out singing this podcast with.
Right. I don't like it.
So you don't like it because?
It woke me up from sleep once when I was a kid. Like, I'd never heard it before. It woke me up and it was like having like a real life nightmare. It was the weirdest thing ever.
Waking up into a mushroom trip of that voice coming at you.
Yeah, I'd never heard it before. And that there's like a... What is it? It's like a trumpet with like one of those...
Mutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really annoying sounding to me in the middle of the night.
So, in some way, it's not about the song.
I mean, the experience I had with it.
It is a little bit about the song.
Yeah.
But it's also just this memory that how you got exposed to the song highly influences how you feel about the song.
Yeah. And it's funny because like I've heard it's... I listened to it now and I'm like...
Yeah, it's fine.
Fine. Yeah. It's whatever. But... A fine song combined with a terrible memory. Made the worst song ever to me. And there's probably worse, like probably Ahab the Arab.
The Shriners Convention.
Ray Stevens, come on, dude.
He was big back in the 70s and 80s.
Yes, he was.
I listened to him a lot. That's where I got my early racism from.
Oh, I just got it from my hometown, Dubuque.
All right. Well, hey, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
This is Wes and Mike Waste Time Listening to Music, brought to you by Wes and Mike Waste Time Watching TV.
Yeah. I don't know how long we're going to do this.
Yeah. Maybe a couple more albums.
Yeah, a couple more weeks. Yeah. And then we'll get into TV.
Yeah, whatever the next thing is. I really enjoyed the Soundgarden. We did Soundgarden Super Unknown last week.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And so this is Modest Mouse, The Moon and Antarctica. Mm.
They named it that just so people would fumble over that name in 25 years.
I think so. It's funny because like you've said like songs by these guys, and they've got like interesting titles and stuff, and kind of like Shushine, like God.
Teeth like God, Shushine. Yeah. I have a story about that.
Okay, so the funny thing is like you've said these, and they're like so ingrained in your. In who you are, that like you say them and they it's like second, it's just like these are the words, you know. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I've seen Modest Mouse probably 6 times total in a whole bunch of different states. But the first time I saw them was.
Once in state of intoxication.
Well, probably 4 times of that.
Okay.
That crosses state lines. First time I saw them, they were opening for Built to Spill at the Dingo in Albuquerque, which is a club probably smaller than Gabe's, maybe about the size of Gabe's.
Okay.
But, you know, like just a good, dirty rock club.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard of them. I went to see Built to Spill, but I was like, oh, these guys are pretty good. But, you know, not really thinking anything about it. But like a week previous to that, I'd written these lyrics that was something like Shimmer, Shakes, and Shines. And then that song, Teeth Like God Shoeshine, he has a line on there, it goes, Shake, Shimmers, and Shines. I'm like, God damn it. You ever do that with a joke where
always,
like you write something or you write something and then you immediately see somebody do that basically same thing?
Yeah, I was watching new Dave Attell special, and he told a joke, and it had something. I can't even remember what it was, but it definitely had was right in the same vein as some joke that I've been doing. I'm like,
Well, that one's out the window. Just ripped that page out.
Whatever.
but I couldn't write a song with the line right. Shake, Shimmer, Shine anymore. Right. Shimmer, Shakes, and Shines.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, so that was the first time. And then when I think back of like my, you know, you always think about those times where you're like, oh, I saw this band win. Like that's the one for me that I got to see them open up for Built to Spill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 95 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, to see, like, Giant Band as an opening act, that was probably Soundgarden for me when they opened for Skid Row.
Oh, right.
And pretty unusual pairing. Yeah.
Is that the one you talked about last week?
Yeah.
Okay. That was in Davenport?
Yeah.
Okay.
Skid Row, I saw Skid Row twice when I was young, and they had Soundgarden opened for the first time and Pantera the second time.
What?
Yeah. Skid Row didn't mess around.
I guess not. They're like, let's get better bands than us on this bill.
Yeah, they're like, we're not bringing out any softballs with us.
We suck, and we know that. So we gotta give the crowd something to like.
Yeah, they were so much. Skid Row's a fun band to watch, but like when they performed, they had the guys from Pantera came out on stage with them, and they played Cold Gin.
Mm.
I don't remember. I think Dimebag Darrell like made boots out of like PBR boxes. So they look like Gene Simmons boots, you know?
Oh, that's so dumb. But funny.
Funny, yeah.
Well, so this is this Modest Mouse of Moon in Antarctica. I got some clarifications and corrections. Should we jump into that?
Yes,
I have so many.
Oh, good.
So Cecilia is, in fact, a Simon and Garfunkel song, not a Paul Simon song.
Okay.
There is only one verse in that entire song.
Okay.
And it's the one where he says he gets up and goes to the bathroom and comes back and some guy's in the bed when he returns. That's the only verse. And then the rest of the song is just basically them singing, Cecilia, you're breaking my heart.
I'm breaking my confidence daily.
Yeah, it's such a weird song.
Yeah.
I never listened to the lyrics of that song. I could sing the, you know, the chorus because it's so catchy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a funny song.
I love it.
Bring the Ruckus. Remember that reference?
Bring the Ruckus. No.
So when the vampires are at the...
Oh, right.
And Colin's like, I think that's... or not. Yeah, Colin, he goes, yeah. I think that's a Wu-Tang reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a song called Bring the Ruckus.
Okay.
Because I think the MC rhymes Ruckus with something else.
Right.
Metallica were not on SST.
Okay.
So I had to bring that one in because I hardly ever get to correct anything that you say. Because you're always right about everything. We're talking about Seattle being the farthest north major city in America.
Uh-huh.
It is at 47.6 degrees north. And you said, well, about Portland, Maine?
Yeah.
And Portland, Maine is 43.6 degrees north.
Okay. So quite a few degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Portland, Oregon's even farther north than Portland, Maine, because when you drive between Eugene and Portland, there's like a 45th parallel sign, which is exactly like halfway to the from the equator to the North Pole.
Gotcha.
Ricky Rackman, Cat House Club.
Cat House.
Did you go look it up?
No, yeah. But yeah.
So I was just reading his Wikipedia page. So this is a fun little connection. So he auditioned to be the singer of the Angry Samoans. Do you know that band?
No.
They were like a first wave punk band out of L.A.
Okay.
But the first singer of the Angry Samoans was Greg Turner, and he taught Matt at the College of Santa Fe when I went there.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah, we never even talked about where the name Soundgarden came from.
Oh, yeah, it's like from a art installation in a park or something.
Mm-hmm. Right? In Seattle, yeah. Yeah, they just got like big things, like so pipes, so when the wind blows, it just like you get that whistle of like all these different tones,
yeah,
different size pipes.
And it's a sound garden.
It's a sound garden, that's exactly what it is. We didn't talk about Mudhoney.
Didn't, huh?
And yeah, and they were like foundational of that Seattle sound.
For sure, yeah.
Maybe more than any other band, like for me, defines what Seattle sounded like at that time.
So Mudhoney evolved from Green River, which was Mark Arm, the singer, and then Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard were in Green River, and they then joined Mother Love Bone, and then their singer Andy Wood died, so then they, evolved into Pearl Jam.
Yeah, this little band you might have heard of.
Pearl Jam. Yeah, and Mudhoney sort of stuck with their, you know, punk roots.
Yes, sludge punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never really varied from that very much. They were committed.
Yeah.
They watch all of their friends fucking become international stars.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, we're just going to keep playing this thing.
Yeah. Well, they have a really good song called Touch Me, I'm Sick, which was, do you remember the movie Singles?
Oh, of course.
And they had a song called Touch Me, I'm Dick, because their band was called Citizen Dick.
Oh, but Touch Me, I'm Sick is on the soundtrack, though, right?
No.
Are you sure?
The single soundtrack.
Because I always think, oh, yeah, that because I think that's where I discovered that song, Touch Me, I'm Sick, was from the singles.
Okay, yeah.
So somehow, like, I worked my way back to Mudhoney from there. That's funny.
Touch Me, I'm Dick. My buddy used to have a Citizen Dick t-shirt he would wear. You might know him. His name's Bill.
Of course. And then I was looking at other bands, because we were talking about what other bands came out of Seattle. And none of them, you know, was that Seattle sound, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But Fleet Foxes, Band of Horses.
Oh, yeah. I love Band of Horses. Band of Horses sounds an awful lot like Modest Mouse. Vocally.
Okay.
They both have similar.
Yeah, he's a better singer. Band of Horses guy is a better singer, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They both sound similar to me. Kind of that real high range.
Seattle, after that, sort of became very diverse, I think, musically. I mean, it's very diverse prior to that, too, but...
Right.
Randy Carlyle's from Seattle.
Oh, nice.
Let's see, Presidents of the United States, they were also of that era, and they were very weird.
Yeah? Peaches.
So I think I told you that I saw Beck at, like, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And the bass player... Because it was just like a last-minute show.
Right.
So the bass player from Presidents of the United States opened just solo. him singing president songs
by himself.
Solo on the bass.
That's fun.
And then Beck's tape player didn't work, so he couldn't do Loser. Because the rest of the show was just him playing acoustic guitar. Mm. And then so he had like the backing track on a cassette tape. And then the cassette tape didn't work.
Mm.
And so then the guy from Presidents just came out and beatboxed.
Nice.
And he did Loser over that beatboxing.
I went and watched some live music last night.
Oh, yeah. Did you go to the El Rey?
Yeah. Look at this guy. This is the singer for the band I went and
saw. What the
That dude is just yoked. Yeah. He's got a mohawk, and he's like 50 years old.
Jesus
just
Christ.
Just absolutely jacked.
Jesus Christ.
The band is called Destrophy. It's not exactly I like metal, but like, I don't know, they kind of play like, sort of like newer metal, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, not new metal, not like okay. Corn, but I don't know
Is it like Mastodon, sort of?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Shinedown or something, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know.
Like radio-friendly metal,
kind of? No, not really. I don't know, it's hard.
All right.
It all sort of becomes... It sounds like it's well-produced, you know what I mean? And I sort of like junky sound
and
stuff.
Yeah, you like rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Which is, talking about Modest Mouse.
Yeah.
A little rough around the edges.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this album.
Yeah.
Made me feel good.
So the last thing I will say is so you had that Kim Thayil quote last week where, you know, he was saying people come up and be like, you know, you really speak for me. And Kim Thayil was like, well, speak for yourself. But it did make me think. I thought about that a lot this week. Like, this is the power of art, and especially music, to, like, say things that we don't necessarily know how to say ourselves.
Yeah.
Or, like, express something that, like, we feel, but we don't know how.
Yeah.
Or we might not even know we feel that until we, like, see or hear somebody say something or play something.
It felt sort of like a hardened thing to say, but he's a young guy at the time, so he probably was like, well, why would... Yeah. Me, a 26-year-old guy, had anything to say for you, a 48-year-old person.
But you do. And that's the whole point. That's the only reason to do any art.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to express something that other people also feel or think.
Yeah. That's what jokes are, right?
Yeah.
The best jokes are the ones that nobody else has thought of, but everybody else goes, why didn't I think of that?
Or a lot of people have thought of, but you just said it in a way that nobody has ever thought of before.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely the best moments.
Okay.
Should we get into this? Sure. So give me some background on...
All right. So here's what I know about Modest Mouse. They formed in Issaquah, like you said, in 1992, with vocals and guitar by Isaac Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah Green was on drums, and Eric Judy played the bass. Eric Judy.
Mm-hmm. Jeremiah Green just died.
Just died.
Like 2 years ago.
December 31st, 2022.
Wow.
And the band's name reportedly comes from a passage in a Virginia Woolf story, The Mark on the Wall.
I never knew that. I always in my head. I love the name Modest Mouse. I always thought it was like a play on Mighty Mouse.
Oh.
like I'm not mighty, but modest.
Right. So I didn't... There's been a ton of members of the band, so I really only looked up the three founding members. Yeah,
because everybody else just kind of bit players, right? They kind of come in and play for a little bit and then go on to do their own things.
Or... Yeah, because, like, Isaac Brock's been in the band the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah Green was in the band almost the entire time. He was out for, like, a year.
Because he was
in
sick, 2004.
He had, like, a psychotic episode or a mental breakdown.
Oh, wow.
So then they replaced him. And when they did, when he came back, they just had two drummers.
Oh, that's fun.
And then Eric Judy, he was in the band until like 2011. And then he decided he just didn't want to have the rigors of even just leaving home to go record music and stuff.
Yeah.
He had three young kids.
Yeah.
So he and his wife now own a bookstore in... on Orcas Island called Darville's Bookstore.
Oh, fun. Orcas Island is great.
Is it?
Yeah, it's out in the Puget Sound.
Okay.
Outside Seattle.
Yeah, so it's a bookstore and a coffee shop.
Okay. Say the name again.
Darville's Bookstore.
Darville's, all right.
And he was, so Eric was born in, he was the only one that was born in Washington, Kalama. And then Jeremiah was born. Green was born in Oahu, and Isaac Brock was born in Helena, Montana.
Oh, yeah. He also lived in this little town south of Eugene called Cottage Grove for a while.
Oh, yeah?
And I think just as a kid, I think he had a rough upbringing.
Oh, yeah, I watched a documentary. It wasn't really a documentary. It was sort of like an artistic take on, like...
a biopic.
Yeah, kind of, but it wasn't by them. It was somebody else. So I guess that would be an autobiopic. But, it was, there was interviews with the band and stuff, and there's some song they have called, like, Trailer Park.
Oh, yeah.
And that's about, like, him growing up in a trailer park when and it's funny, I grew up in a trailer park, too, and he was like, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, it's your neighborhood, you just ride your bike around, and there's kids, and it seems pretty normal.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about it when I was a kid.
Yeah, because, like, what else do you know? Like, what do you have to compare it to?
Yeah.
Unless you go over to your friend's house, and you're like, to steal Mitch's joke. What is that? Oh, that's called a basement.
Where do these steps go? That's what I know about the band.
Cool.
It's a little background history.
Yeah, and they were also on Sub Pop for a few albums. K Records out of Olympia for a few albums.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that he had... I think Isaac has a K Records logo tattooed on him or something.
Oh, sweet. Or something. That's great. Yeah, I think that was a label that was, really just threw themselves behind Modest Mouse and wrote it out for a while before they kind of found their way.
So if that's what I'm thinking of, the documentary I saw, basically they took their album to Sub Pop, and Sub Pop passed on it, and then the other record label that was in the same building listened to it, and they're like, yeah, we want to make a whole album.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that must be who it was, Gary.
I guess so, yeah. So when I was looking at other bands that came out of Seattle, Modest Mouse was on there. And they just like had a little snippet of each band. This is such a great quote. So Modest Mouse, who else has found a way to merge philosophy student lyrics to Carnival Barker vocals and nimble mesmeric guitar rock? Pretty good summation.
Yeah, he's got a very interesting voice.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of draws you in. It's very welcoming, but it's really unique sounding, like in this format.
I like the idea of a Carnival Barker. I thought that captured something.
Yeah.
Uh, you know, like for me, one of the signs of a great album is it like when you can go back and listen to it, you know, after years of not listening to it, and it feels brand new again.
Yeah.
And that's what this album did for me. It's just like, it's like I know all the songs, but it feels like I'm listening to the album for the first time. Like I'm hearing things I'd never heard before, like sounds or catching lyrics or, you know, anything like that.
This song or this album meant something to you, or this band meant something
to you. Yeah, and I think, you know, coming out of Seattle, you know, and as we talked about last week, when I was just like discovering these little bands, you know, who were just, you know, driving around in a van from city to city and playing small clubs, and Modest Mouse kind of, when I discovered them. So I think after I saw them at the Dingo, I think they were touring on The Lonesome Crowded West, or that was about to come out, and I went and got it. And it's kind of like very Western themed. I think Trailer Park might be on that album.
I think so.
But very much like what growing up in the West. And so like immediately I can start to connect it to a lot of those images or a lot of those themes.
Yeah.
But there's just something about Isaac Brock that like I just connected with emotionally. And like I can't explain why him and not others.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something about his voice where it just feels like it's about to fall apart at any minute. So I was thinking about this earlier this week where like, when you listen to him, it feels like you're walking a tightrope. like there's so much tension in his voice, and it feels like it's just about to like collapse at any moment.
Mm.
And for me, that's that emotion of Modest Mouse, is just that tension. But then also like he's a super depressed dude, so I like that part. When Float On broke, and you know, and then they became this huge band.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing this headline one time, was like, "The secret to Modest Mouse's success: Isaac Brock got happy." But like, this is not a happy album. Like, there's some
uplifting songs on it.
Just like high energy and
yeah.
But man, he's just, I'd say this album and everything before it is just,
mm-hmm.
it's just so sad. Like, there's just so much sadness. Even like the sort of joyous songs, like there's just like a sadness underpinning everything.
That documentary I watched kind of talked about how he was sort of obsessed with urban decay,
mm-hmm.
and like malls taking over everything. And
yeah, he has this great line somewhere in that, I'm not going to remember what, it might be Teeth Like God Shoe Shine, but he says, malls are the soon-to-be ghost towns. And so, yeah, so he just like, he can capture these images like so quickly and in so few words.
Mm-hmm.
He has this other song on there called Cowboy Dan. I didn't move the city moved to me, and I won out desperately.
Mm.
And then there's another line where it goes, drives his truck to the desert, fires his rifle in the sky, says, God, if I have to die, you will have to die. Like, just shit like that, man. It's just, I was thinking about that comparison between like him and Donnie, where their brains just like can just find connections.
Donnie's a comedy friend.
Yeah, Donnie Townsend. But it's weird because he's funny, like, and he's smart, but his brain just works in a way that like none of our brains work.
Right.
But it's
really fascinating to get to see in from the outside.
Yeah. And just from the outside, I mean, just when Donnie's on, man, he can get a crowd going. And just saying the weirdest shit, and people just think it's the fucking funniest thing they've ever seen.
Right. Stuff that you're just like, I couldn't say that in a million years and right.
laugh.
Right.
Yeah. So I think for me, there's just like an emotional connection between like my own sort of semi-depressive state when I was a young man,
mm-hmm.
at that I connected with Isaac Brock and his depressive state.
So do you think this album came out like what, 2000? You were 30 then.
Yeah,
so
right.
were you beyond like this having a impact? Like there are certain albums from when I was a kid that I listened to that like were foundational, formative, mm-hmm. you know. And this, like when you're 30, it feels like you're sort of beyond building your foundation. Yeah. But
I was very much a late bloomer.
Like, yeah, true.
I think when I was 30, I still very much felt like a kid, and I was still like discovering new things. And
yeah,
I sort of had stunted growth because I was in the Navy for 6 years. So I feel like 18 to 24, like those years are just like, I mean, some amazing things happened in them, but like it wasn't my life. Mm-hmm. Like I was doing this other thing, and other people got to tell me what my life was.
Right.
And then so when I got out at 24, I felt like I was 18. Like I was just going into the world for the first time.
Yeah. That's kind of like different situation for me, but I got married when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So like I just went into like lockdown mode, you know, living in a, and just living life, right?
Yeah.
And immediately, like went from high school to being an adult.
Yeah.
And so when I got divorced, I was 22, or I was 20, 23. And then that's when I sort of like, so like, I think most people like their musical awakening happens when they're going into college age, you know, like 17, 18, 19. Mm-hmm. But for me though, it was good because like when I was 17, like Motley Crue was big.
Right.
So there's not a lot of, you know, heart and emotion. Right. But like when I was 23, which is 1993, that's when like
Soundgarden, yes, Pearl Jam,
yeah, all those bands. Mm-hmm. So you got to enjoy, or you got to have meaningful music happen while you were going through meaningful times in your life.
Yes, yeah. And so I think about this on the way down. So I don't know if this is my favorite Modest Mouse record, and I kind of like you with Supernoon. Mm-hmm. So I think production-wise it is, because the production is so good on it, and so weird and so interesting. But from a songwriter's perspective, I think The Lonesome Crowded West is my favorite album.
Mm-hmm.
But that came out on, I think, K Records, or
mm-hmm.
maybe Sub Pop, I'm not quite sure. But you know, it just did not have the production value that this album had, because this was their major label debut. And
so do you have a favorite song off the album?
It's a good question.
I can tell you what mine is.
Okay.
And I've listened to this probably 15 times since last Sunday, this album. It's the first song, Third Planet.
Oh, yes, yeah.
There's like a line in there where he says, the universe is shaped exactly like yes. He says it over and over.
Uh-huh.
But like, I'm like, I can't get that out of my head.
Right. Yeah, so just create this image.
Yeah.
Right, and then that's all you have to do. And then you can just repeat that line over and over. And so, yeah, I have some stuff sort of thinking about that. Like, as I listen to this album, I realize, like, they don't really write verses and choruses. Like, that's not how they structure songs.
Okay.
So if you look up the lyrics, like, some people will list, and I assume that this is probably, like, the way they listed them in lyric sheets or whatever, like, verse, chorus. But, like, that's just not... You sing this, and then you go back to the chorus, and then you sing a verse, and you go back to the chorus. So I do think that they probably had some kind of influence on my songwriting. I think Bob Dylan is the same way. Like, he doesn't feel the need to write choruses. Like, he'll have, like, 8 verses and no chorus. And so I started to think that Modest Mouse almost sets their music up like classical music. So there'll be, like, movements. So there's like part A and part B and part C, and then as they move, like the tempo changes, or the key, you know, the key changes, or on this album, like I think on that song, so like one part is like very, like his vocals are very distorted, on another part they're very clear,
mm-hmm.
and so it's these ways of making distinctions between these different parts. And it's like, oh, we're going to do the A part, we're going to do the B part, we're going to return to the A part, and then we're going to do the C part, and then we'll sort of sit on there for a while, and then make reference to the A part, and then go on to another part. And so, like, I guess you could call them choruses, but they just don't feel like choruses to me. Like, they're not, like, the part of the song where, like, you just, like, pump your fist in the air, you know, and sing along.
Right.
So, for me, that was an interesting sort of way of thinking about it, of, like... Just even the way they structure their songs are like so them. Like, yeah, they don't sound like other.
Mm-hmm.
I think they use a lot of like soft loud. Have you heard this term before?
Mm-mm.
So like a lot of people talk about the Pixies sort of creating this model. Soft versus loud choruses, soft versus loud chorus. And then that's what Nirvana stole, was like that soft versus loud chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of do that too, where they'll just be like parts where he's screaming and then it just stops, and then it's just like an acoustic guitar playing, and then it comes back in and he's screaming again. And
do you ever listen to Silver Sun Pickups?
Yes,
they're
much
that
like that.
A lot.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that the Pixies sort of, I don't know if they invented it, but they sort of perfected it in a way. And everybody who came after the Pixies who did that, like everybody's like, oh, the Pixies, you know, that's the Pixies' influence. I like the stars are projectors. the stars are projectors projecting our lives down onto this planet Earth.
Okay. So I think I told you this, but like, to me, first half of the album is really strong. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels. And then the second half of the album, it's good music, but it, to me, in my head, listening to it, it all sort of blended together to become sort of, I don't know, one same vibe. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the other thing I noticed is, like, they don't really do song breaks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no break. Like, so one song just, like, stops and the other one begins right away.
Yeah.
Kind of gives you that feeling of just, like, it feels like one big thing instead of, like, right. Oh, here's...
That's probably it, yeah.
Yeah.
That song, Wild Packs of Family Dogs,
yes.
That's different sounding.
It's yes.
Funny and goofy sounding.
I do love that song. I have a friend, he's a professor in New York, and he's got a couple kids, and I think he was just, like, laying with his kids on the sofa one day, and that song came on, and he just, like, turned his camera on and then sent it to me. He's like, guess what's playing? Because he always knew I loved that song. You know that podcast Bandsplain?
No.
That's a fun name.
I like that. Yeah.
The woman who does it, like, is kind of irritating.
Okay.
But
you have to be a band splainer.
Right. But basically, they'll just do, like, one podcast about a band, and they'll kind of pull in an expert, somebody who's written about that band a lot.
Okay.
And so they did one on Modest Mouse several years ago, and she said this thing right at the, like, introducing them, like, here's Modest Mouse, and one of my favorite things she said was, Modest Mouse is not a jam band, but they're not a jam band. Because they'll just, like, have long sections of just, like, right. Instrumental, you know, just but, you know, none of the guitar wankery, you know, like, no big solos or whatever.
Yeah. I read that Third Planet was about Isaac's nephew being born.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And the world that he was coming into.
Mm, going to shake the eye's hand. You know that line?
No. Maybe.
The third planet is surely being watched by an eye in the sky. When I get to the promised land, I'm going to shake the eye's hand.
Okay.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like you said, like, so many of these, like, lyrics are just, like, burned into my brain, and I can just, like, pull them out like they're nothing.
It's funny because, like, after you told me, or after we talked about Soundgarden last week, it was eye-opening to me that, like, Soundgarden's music was so good to me, but, like, really, in the end, like, the words were more, like, just part of the instrument. Mm-hmm. They weren't, like,
they weren't deeply thoughtful
to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were to them, but, like, to me, it didn't, like, the music overall connected for me, and, like, it just made me feel a good experience.
Yes.
But there are bands that have, like, songs where I'm just like, yeah. I mean, that connects with me.
Lyrically.
Lyrically. Mm-hmm. That's what I like lyrics way more than, like, music. That's why I think I don't really enjoy, like, the really heavy bands, like, from, like, the 2000s and stuff, because, like, musically it all sounds the same, but, like, you also can't really understand what the lyrics are.
You're not a Screamcore fan?
No. Right, exactly. Like
that. That's the biggest hit for my Screamcore band back in Portland.
Yeah.
Called Flowers.
Oh. Uncle Flowers and the Screamos.
Third Planet. I mean, I think about that first, like, stanza, again, because I don't think they, you know, they're not writing verses per se, but that first stanza, like, what a beginning to an album. Everything that was keeping me together is falling apart. I got this thing I call my only art of fucking people over.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. What a way to start an album.
Yeah, and, like, his voice just is so clear when he's singing, you know what I mean? It's like, there's no distortion or anything like that. It's just, yeah. I have some, ChatGPT told me some things.
Okay. So some of my favorite lyrics. So lives, in that lives, everybody's afraid of their own life. If you could be anything you want, I bet you'd be disappointed, am I right? That is a depressed dude right there who writes that line.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking about that other line. So he has a song, I think it's on their first album, but he has a song called, I can't remember what the song is called, but he has a line. I'm drinking away the part of the day I cannot sleep away.
Yeah.
That is a depressed dude.
True. When I was young and, like, didn't have any money or food or, like, that's how you get through stuff, you just sleep.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, what are my options here?
Yeah. Also get through depression.
Yeah.
Just sleep through it. Wake up, you're still depressed. Wake up, you're still hungry.
I don't know that I've ever been depressed.
Yeah. Like clinically depressed?
Yeah.
I definitely have been. Oh. I mean, not like can't get out of bed depressed, but...
Yeah. I'm a real upbeat dude.
Nothing but feel goodness coming out of you.
Oh, yeah.
But that is true.
Right. Our next album is going to be a song. It's going to be by Sammy Johns, I think. He sings the song Chevy Van.
Is the album just that song 14 times?
Oh, no. He's got a whole bunch of other stuff about banging underage girls down by the river, too.
And he's got one called Chevy Impala.
He's just got one, like, in the mud.
Toyota Corolla. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, one of the things I really like about his lyric writing is that, I mean, like, Wild Pack of Family Dog, like, that one has, like, a narrative. And it has, like, a theme that runs through it. Mm-hmm. And almost everything else is just, like, these sort of quick ideas. Mm-hmm. So like, Third Planet starts off with that, you know, I got the thing I consider my only art of fucking people over. And then the next line is, my boss just quit his job. He's going to find blind spots. He'll do it. No connection there. But it's, you know, it's like, oh, here's a weird line. Here's a weird line.
Yeah.
But so in The Stars Are Projectors, he says... there was a hidden math equation that asked this, where does a circle begin? Yeah. And just fun little
stuff.
Yeah, very kind of going back to that description that I read of, you know, like philosophers' lyrics, just these weird questions that pop up.
So did you ever like find yourself situationally in your life, like turning back to this album and being like, I need this to make me feel good or
yeah,
feel something. Or...
Yeah, I think like most albums I love is I will listen to them very intensely for, you know, like a few months, mm-hmm. and then kind of slide away, mm-hmm. and then just something will trigger and be like, I really want to go listen to that album again. Like either I hear a song from it or something reminds me of the lyric. I'm like, oh, yeah, I haven't listened to that song in a long time, and just go re-listen to the whole album. And mm-hmm. But I would say, like, this didn't necessarily, like, hit at a specific moment where I was, like, going through something. It's just an album I really, really loved, and my apologies to Kim Thayil, but I feel like Isaac Brock was saying things that, like, I felt, mm-hmm. and giving voice to that.
Right. Do you think that was a thing that, so, like, I felt at that point when Flow Down came out, that's the first time I really ever heard mm-hmm. these guys, so, like, I really liked that song, but I never really... Like, I never really felt any connection to Modest mm-hmm. Mouse. Mm-hmm. But, like, listening to this album, this just feels so much deeper than, like, Float On does. Yeah. Float On, I mean, which just makes sense, right? Float On's sort of a feel-good, happy song. Mm-hmm. On, like, a highly produced album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, I don't know if you've ever had this, where, like, you love a band so much, and you sort of like go on this journey with them, like from the time that they're opening for Built to Spill,
right.
And like I'm buying you to their albums, and then all of a sudden they're on a major label, and I'm like, oh, I'm not happy about that, but right. I go get the album and I love the album,
right.
And then all of a sudden just like they write their big pop song,
yeah,
and then they're the biggest band, and you're just like, oh, shoot, we had a good run.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was sort of that way with Soundgarden, but except for I just never felt like it was like I was just into them all the time. But like mm-hmm. I started listening to them with Louder Than Love, mm-hmm. and went from there.
Yeah. So by the time like Down on the Upside or whatever that called is Up on the Downside,
Down on the Upside. I like that one too.
Yeah. But had you sort of lost your that connection in some way?
For sure. Like they didn't speak for me anymore.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so, like, when you talk about somebody speaking for you, like, basically, to me, like, well, I suppose to a lot of people, but, like, when you say to somebody, like, who your favorite band is, like, if you say your favorite band is Soundgarden, people are going to go, oh, I get it, you're that kind of person.
Right.
Like, at that point, like, Soundgarden had become very mainstream,
yes,
so
right.
It didn't make you, you didn't have any street cred anymore.
And then you're just like, that guy's like, no, I swear to God, I started listening to them Louder Than Love. That was my first Soundgarden album, and you got to convince them that you were like,
yeah,
and on the ground floor.
Right, yeah.
I swear to God, man.
Yeah. So I don't know, do these guys give you street cred back in the day if you like them?
I think so. Yeah. I mean... I think they still kind of do a little bit, you know, because I think they sort of, like, rose up real fast, and then they kind of, like, came back down and have settled into this sort of, like, elder statesmen of indie rock sort of thing.
Indie rock, that's what they're considered.
Yeah, that's what I would call them.
So is Death Cab like emo? What is that?
Death Cab? I don't know what emo is either. Like, that's, I don't.
Or is that like a certain, I don't know what emo is either. It's like sad music as far as I know.
I just think of Death Cab as just kind of pop, like indie pop. I would call them indie pop, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
like they make pop music, but they don't make pop music in the way that like Taylor Swift makes pop music. Like they're very well produced. They write very pretty melodies, but they're not like that kind of pop.
Right.
Sort of like the Shins too. I would throw them in that same category.
I would say the Shins remind me of Modest Mouse in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Probably just the way they feel.
Yeah.
Not like musically or anything.
Yeah. Have the same aesthetic, like emotional aesthetic.
Yeah.
So I think I've told you the story before as well, but I went to see Modest Mouse in Denver at the Bluebird Theater, and that's a pretty big theater. And you know, they must have been touring on this album. But the opening band came up, and I was like, those dudes look familiar. Oh, that's fucking Flake Music. But they had become the Shins. So on the bill, they were the Shins, and I didn't know who the Shins were.
Yeah.
But then when they were on stage, I'm like, oh, those are the dudes I fucking saw all the time in Albuquerque.
That's fun.
Yeah. So I think that I know James Mercer has sang on Modest Mouse albums, and so I think there's a lot of like crossover between them. And I think Isaac Brock lives in Portland now, and James Mercer lives in Portland. So I think there's that physical proximity as well that probably helps.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think
that's where Kyle Kinane lives too.
Oh yeah, I just learned this on the last special. But yeah, I think that's right. I think this is also why I love the Shins, is because like they're on the same emotional frequency that I'm on as well.
Gotcha. So you haven't mentioned the album "This Is a Long Drive for Someone with Nothing to Talk About." Is there some good stuff on that one?
Oh man, yes.
I watched in the documentary. They talked about how that album was named that simply because they were living. I think they were living out of town or recording or something out of Seattle, but they had girlfriends in Seattle. Mm. So they'd have to drive into Seattle to see their ladies. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, after doing that so many times, Isaac said, like, he just ran out of things to think about. It was just like, it's a long drive for somebody with nothing to think about.
Yeah. So I never heard that story, but much like the Lonesome Crowded West, this, you know, when you drive around the American West, everything is so far apart. And there's just like long stretches of just desert, like, or just grasslands, you know. Mm-hmm. And that album name always made me think of that, or just like driving across New Mexico and just hours upon hours of just seeing just like sagebrush, you know.
Yeah.
That song Dramamine, if you don't know Dramamine, that's the first song on This Is a Long Drive, and that might be their best song.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Yeah.
All right,
so go listen to that.
Okay.
That is also a very good album, but also very long. I think that's another like 58-minute long, or hour 8 or something like that. I like that we're sort of moving into a phase, well, after Taylor Swift released a double album last week.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of albums are getting shorter, which I like. They're tighter, they're more defined.
I haven't listened to much new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't listened to Waxahachie.
Yeah. Though. That's what I was going to say. You texted me Waxahachie last week.
I've been listening to that a lot.
Yeah. She's from Kansas.
Is she?
Uh-huh. She's a good Midwestern gal.
She's named after a river in Alabama or something.
Yeah. That was very confused as well. Do you know Kevin Morby?
No.
He's like another kind of modern singer-songwriter, rock guy, indie rock guy. But I think they're a couple.
Oh.
I think they live in Kansas City. They're a couple.
Nice. But I've been listening. I listen to Rustin Kelly a lot. I don't know if you know who he is. He's sort of he's like a little country. It's, I don't know, like country rock or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I think he was married to Casey Musgraves, who's like famous.
Yeah. Yeah, we love Casey Musgraves at our house.
Yeah, she's good. We're really off the beaten track. Yeah. Do you want to get back to this? You got anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I don't know. I think those were like sort of my big notes. Sort of like everything that came out after this, after The Moon and Antarctica. I think Good News for People Who Love Bad News. It's a good album. Like, I just...
That's one with Float On.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And like, there's some really good songs on there, but I just feel like the emotional tenor of Modest Mouse changed dramatically between The Moon and Antarctica and then Gnuth for people who love Bad News. I mean, they still write good songs. I still get a kick out of them, but yeah. I'm not, like, if Modest Mouse released an album tomorrow, I'm not going to run out and be like, I got to listen to the new album.
Yeah.
Makes me a little sad, but also, like, they are a top five band for me. Yeah, you take those three albums, This Is a Long Drive, Lonesome Crowded West, and The Moon in Antarctica, and, like, that's a three-album run that I will take over almost everybody.
Yeah. I would like to guess your top five. So Modest Mouse, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan,
yep.
Tom Waits,
yep.
Motorhead.
That's a good guess. Wrong, but good.
Okay. Create a pattern. Break the pattern. That's the joke. That's how jokes work.
That's a good one. That's a good one. You made me laugh. All right. You got anything else?
I don't think so. I really liked it. I really am glad we listened to this, and I don't know what to pick for next week yet.
Okay.
We'll probably talk about it after we're done recording.
Well, I'm going to be out of town next week, so you got a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can just listen to it for a couple weeks. Oh, that's true. You can do it on the plane.
Yeah, you got to tell me before I get on the plane, because I got 18 hours, I think, on Wednesday.
18 hours?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. It's only like 9 hours over there.
Well, so I go to Minneapolis first, and then I have like a six-hour layover in Minneapolis, and then JFK, and then JFK to Heathrow.
Shit, man.
Yeah. So I leave here at 7 a.m. on Wednesday, and I get there at 7 a.m. on Thursday.
Are you meeting Dave in Minneapolis?
No, we're meeting in London.
Oh, you're meeting in London.
Yeah, so this is when I knew Portland like had moved into a different level, like from when I moved there.
Oh,
is that they have direct flights from Portland to London now.
You should just fly out to Portland.
Right.
Wow, that's crazy.
All right. Well, hey, you've been listening to Wes and Mike Waste Time listening to music.
Yeah, let's all float out again.